Very good morning. Aloha, Kakahiaka, and welcome to this edition of Talk Story. And today, of course, a wonderful opportunity to chat with Governor Linda Lingle all hour long. Governor, welcome back to the studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick. Great to be here.
We have got just about as much information as humanly possible to talk about this hour because it is the close of the 2008 legislative session. That alone, we could probably spend about 3 or 4 hours on.
Well, I'm here. I'm available at least for an hour.
we'll make that time work well. We also want to invite our folks to give us a call at 521-8383, 1-888-565-8383. Let me just start with the macro, Governor. Your thoughts about this 2008 session?
Well, I thought we had a couple of victories, Rick, for the public, for the community, but we had a lot of disappointments as well. I think the big victory long-term for the state was getting the Harbor's Modernization Plan adopted. Mm-hmm. This was an $850 million plan over 6 years. It's a very expedited schedule. It's going to affect 6 major harbors in the state, Kahului on Maui, Honolulu and Kalailoa here on Oahu, Hilo and Kawaihae harbors on the Big Island, and Naviluili on Kauai. And this is long overdue. It would set us up for the next 20 to 30 years. As you know, we're at capacity now, especially in Kahului on Maui here in Honolulu. And we really did have a consensus that this was important to do, legislators and the harbor users and the administration. So I think it was a huge victory. It's a big amount of money, all paid from user fees at the harbor. So while there's a likelihood that, you know, there's a portion of that that does get passed on, there was simply no choice but to move forward. But I do want to stress this is not money that could have gone to schools or roads or anything else. It's only money that comes into the harbor fund and can only go out for harbor improvements. But it was a big victory, except for Donna Kim in the Senate, who tried to torpedo it, as she does with anything that looks good, just because she can. Everybody else thought it was a really good idea. We had great support from both parties, from both transportation chairs, and I think it was the most important thing long-term for the state. The Turtle Bay bill also passed with legislature going on record that we should continue in our efforts to try to make this a win-win situation. And by that I mean a win for the employees of the existing resort and making certain that it remains viable over the long term, and a win for the general public that we're able to preserve some very important lands in the area with no major outlay of money from the state. And that's still our goal. So getting that bill passed meant a lot to us because it put the legislature on record at least asking us to continue on down this road.
The Turtle Bay is for another, between the two of us, our divergent comments or thoughts about it. But the one thing I will say is that the Turtle Bay issue has brought together elements, politically speaking, that are quite surprising. And if there's anything that I could say about Turtle Bay that is, there was a remarkable coalescence of folks that really are backing this proposal, especially in the Big Square building.
Well, I think it shows that people realize the importance overall of both of our goals. We have two goals here. One is to maintain the economic viability of that existing resort and the jobs that it creates and the services that it provides out on the North Shore, and at the same time recognize that the quality of life is going to be affected if there was ever a build-out that was envisioned by this plan, because the community just can't absorb it, the infrastructure can't handle it, there's no funding for it. So I think the ability to come together with the representative of those employees, which is the labor union. There are two unions actually out there, Local 5 and ILWU represented. Also, it's an opportunity for the owners of the condominiums out there who have always wanted to purchase the fee interest and haven't been able to, for them to purchase that fee interest in the condominiums, because that would just be used to buy down the amount we pay for all of the land, and that would help us move toward our goal of having minimal to no outlay of public funds. And that really is the goal. So it would be a sort of a same-day transaction. We have been approached by major hotel companies here who want to buy the existing resort and golf courses, and they make an offer, and the condominium owners make an offer to purchase the fee interest, and combining those two then is to go to the creditors and make an offer to them. So for those people who feel that somehow we're forcing anyone to do anything or forcing the buyers, it's simply not true. This property is up for sale. It has been up for sale. There have been no buyers, and we're simply a willing buyer in this case that have the backing of the community.
The other issues that we're facing, the Big Square Building, and especially in this legislative session, I made a comment before we came on. I thought one of the greatest accomplishments during the session was the fact that you vetoed some legislation that would have been really onerous and very negative for our community.
Well, there was, Rick, some legislation passed this year that, you know, I disagreed strongly on, and I tried to make it known, and the public really backed us up. One was a bill that would have taken away the right of working people to vote when there's a question of whether they want to be represented by a union or not. Right now, those kinds of votes are taken by a secret ballot, and everyone gets to say in this secret ballot, whether, are they for a union or are they not for a union? And with any major life choice in a democracy, a secret ballot is the foundation of our freedom and our rights and our way of life. And this bill would have taken away the rights of workers to have a secret ballot. In other words, someone could come up to you and say, here, sign this. And once you sign it right in front of them, whoever they are, then that would count as your vote that you wanted to join a union. And again, it would take away the rights that people have across the country to have that secret ballot. So I did veto that. They were not able to override the veto, and I think it was because of the tremendous help we got from the Farm Bureau, because this would have had a devastating effect on our struggling agriculture industry, and the small business community with the Chamber of Commerce stepping forward and going around and just talking individually to legislators and letting them know what this would mean. And I think it highlights, Rick, is that most people in the legislature don't read the bills that they're voting on or that they're signing. And part of that is because there are just so many of them coming across, so they tend to rely on the committee chairman or on their own staff. Mm-hmm. And while in theory that may work, the fact is these committee chairs are not giving them the whole story, or they're not voting for the broad public interest. So that was a good veto, and it was sustained. The next one was the emergency powers. They wanted to limit my emergency powers and future governors' emergency powers. And while I have, you know, 2.5 years left, I was fighting this because every future governor would be saddled with this, and you need to have maximum powers in an emergency. And they did this, they said, because they didn't like me using emergency powers to deal with the homeless situation on the Leeward Coast. But at the time I did that, Rick, I made an emergency proclamation. I wrote to both Senator Hanabusa and Speaker Say, and I said, look, I know there's been some discussion about this. If you don't think this is the right path, please call me, let me know, and I'll stop this. I'll stop this proclamation. And they never told me that. And that's because in their heart of hearts, they knew this was a serious problem. It's just that it was innovative. No one had used it for a purpose like this, a public health emergency that I felt was developing out on the Leeward Coast. Rather than waiting for it to happen full-blown, we tried to preempt it from happening. And again, they had an opportunity to say, Governor, we want you to stop. I told them, just let me know if you don't want me to continue down this road. And they didn't say anything. So to come in then and try to take away the broader powers and limit them was really an overreaction and a recognition that they didn't understand the seriousness of the homeless situation on the Leeward Coast. But I think the one bill, and those are a difference of opinion, Rick, but the one bill we can talk about after your break that is just simply, and you know, I don't use these words, these kind of words very often, but was just stupid, was the bill to give away our state's electoral votes to the mainland. Here these legislators took our votes as citizens of Hawaii, and they said, you don't count anymore in any presidential election, because once this compact of states is formed, if it's ever formed, and I'm not worried because I don't think mainland legislators are as stupid. I don't think they're going to give away their electoral votes the way our legislators gave away our electoral votes. It's outrageous. They said to the people of Hawaii, we don't care who you want to vote for in the presidential election from now on. However, a group of mainland states votes, and once they have the votes for electing someone, we're just going to throw our votes over to that person, regardless of how the people here feel. That's just stupid, Rick, because the Constitution, the compromise that was reached when America was being formed, was to protect the small states. We would create this electoral college concept. And it really is to our benefit to have the electoral college.
Absolutely.
But now they've taken that away and just handed it to the mainland states. Big, big mistake. People should feel real outraged about it.
And we'll continue our conversation with Governor Linda Lingle with your telephone calls. Expand on this particular point. Also, other issues on the agenda. Well, there are just so many at this point that we want to jump right back in as soon as possible. 23 past the hour. It is this edition of Talk Story. Delighted that you're with us here as we reach out throughout the entire 50th state. Today's edition featuring, of course, Governor Linda Lingle. We hope that you'll join us. 1-888-565-8383 is a free call from our good friends on the neighbor islands. Wanted to allow and expand a little bit for some time to expand for Governor to comment about the electoral vote and the decision that was made in the legislative session. And I'm sure some folks are wondering, well, really, what's so bad about that? Because our electoral vote number is so small. If we congregate with others, perhaps that will give us a little more influence.
Well, the bottom line, Rick, is that who we vote for in Hawaii should be where our votes go. If we vote for John McCain, then that's where our electoral vote should go. If we vote for Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, that's where our votes should go. And in the past, in fact, if you look at how Hawaii voted, but how the nation voted, oftentimes our votes would have been given to a candidate we didn't vote for. And it's ironic that the Democrats would be the ones who would have lost out in that, because while a Republican won nationally in several races, and this was pointed out to them, a Democrat won here, and that's what the people of Hawaii felt, and that's what should be registered, is who they believed should win the race. Not because Pennsylvania, New York, Florida, Texas, and California vote a certain way, and because they're such big states, they have all those electoral votes, and once they hit a certain number, you know, a majority, mm-hmm. our votes just automatically go to that person, and that's just not right. It's disenfranchising the people of Hawaii. It's making their voting in the presidential election meaningless.
Yeah. Well put. More issues and topics of conversation. We're going to go to Paul for our first call during this segment.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Paul. Welcome to the program. You're on
Good
with
morning.
Governor Lingle.
I have just a quick question. The governor's supporting McCain, correct?
Yes, I am, Paul.
Yes. And what would you say, if you can wrap it up, to the Clinton and Obama supporters to try and get them to McCain? What would be some of the issues that you'd raise for your reason on supporting McCain? I'm going to hang up and listen.
Appreciate it, Paul. Thanks for the call very much.
Thank you very much, Paul. At the top of my list would be the nation's security, our physical security. I don't believe the Democrats take the war on terror seriously, and it is extremely serious to our country's security. Second would be taxes. We're struggling right now with a very high cost of living in Hawaii and across the country, and both Democrats will raise taxes, and they've said so already. And thirdly, both the Democrats would nationalize health care. They'd have different versions of national health care, mm-hmm. but they would do it. Senator McCain recognizes that we want doctors making medical decisions for us, not government bureaucrats. So those would be the three substantive reasons. And I would add to that Senator McCain's proven record to be able to work across party lines. I know that Senator Obama talks about it, but he has one of the most partisan voting records in the United States Senate. And people in the federal administration will tell you that he is not a person who works across party lines. Senator McCain has a proven record on climate change, on campaign finance reform, on immigration, on judicial appointments, not just of being willing to work across party lines, but being a leader when there are these issues that come up that need bipartisan support in order to move forward. So I think his record is crystal clear, and that doesn't even begin to get to the issue of his superior experience, his character, and his dedication to the country.
Thanks so much for the question, Paul. We appreciate it. Governor, we have just a couple of minutes before our bottom of the hour break. In the previous hour, for those of us here on Oahu, we had a chance to talk with the Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard. I also understand that you'll be working with them a little bit later on today, but I know the robotics competition, the recent competition here, brought a great deal of pride and and also recognition to our youth. Tell us a little bit about their involvement.
Well, I was interested to listen to the captain on the radio this morning because the Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard also helped us to carry out our Hawaii Innovation Initiative through the introduction of robotics into our high schools in a broad sense. And we had the opportunity to expand robotics in the state. We went from 4 teams in the high schools to 25 teams in 1 year. And that means 32% of all of our high schools have now robotics programs, and that makes us second in the nation for the percentage of high schools. But we couldn't have done it without the shipyard, because in order for the students to participate, they need adult mentors to help them. And oftentimes that means engineer-type mentors. And so when we were forming all these new teams, we had a great grant from NASA. We had $1 million from them to help us. BAE Systems stepped forward to help so many of our teams and to help us get the program running. But it always comes back to the adult mentors. This is a very intense competition, and the program lasts for 6 weeks, and they need to be with these young people. And so we put out an email saying we were short some mentors. And the guys at the Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard stepped forward, and they mentored 4 of our teams, McKinley, Radford, Sacred Hearts, and Campbell High Schools. And of those teams, 3 of them, McKinley, Radford, and Sacred Hearts, went to the Nationals. And again, without these adult mentors, those from the shipyard and many others all across the community, we couldn't have done it. So I really am appreciative, not just for what the shipyard does protecting us and the security it provides, although that's outstanding, but also what they did for the young people and continue to do for us moving forward.
Wonderful, wonderful organization. And we thank our guests in the previous segment for sharing all of that info. And Governor, thank you for the information as well. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the state legislature, also other newsworthy issues that have arisen. That would include the Super Ferry perhaps returning to Kauai. We'd like to get the governor's take. Also, conversation on other issues in the legislative session. All of that coming ahead. Stay with us on this edition of Talk Story. Thank you, Dick. Good morning, one and all. Glad you're with us here. You're dialed into this edition of Talk Story today. Welcoming Governor Linda Lingle. Glad you're with us, and certainly hope that things are going your way. We're going to get back to our conversation with the governor. And some of the topics emerging from, of course, the legislative session. Over to the Valley Isle, though, where Gil is joining us today. Gil, thanks for the call. You're on with the governor. Good morning.
Hello.
Gil, are you with us? Good morning.
Yeah, top of the morning.
Hi.
Hi. It's this Governor Lingle and Mr. Hamada?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Governor Lingle, let me say that you're doing an excellent job. You made a wonderful mayor over here in Maui, and you're making an excellent governor. And Mr. Amato, you do a great public service. This is quite incredible, your show. I'm an old, Goldwater Miller Republican, conscious of a conservative type. And, I'm looking at the civil defense. I was listening to Mr. Amato's show about 2 weeks ago. And civil defense is my concern here. The head of the health department recommended, we start out with 3 days, food, water, medicine, and things for each family member, and then work immediately on 3 weeks, then 3 months, then 6 months optimally. And I thought that was the smartest thing I heard in years, considering the hurricanes and what's going on in the world. And I was just wondering, the last time civil defense occurred here was during earthquakes, and it didn't work too good. About 40 minutes after the earthquake, they realized it wasn't a tsunami because, Kihei, Malaya, and, Honolulu was all still here. And I went, I bet they got that fixed. And I started thinking, the runs on rice and things like that. Does the state and civil defense have any real plans to take care of the people of Hawaii for more than, let's say, 2 or 3 weeks?
Gil, thank you very much for the call.
Well, thank you, Gil. Know that the civil defense network in our state is the same as every state, and it's a pyramid, so that at the base of the pyramid and the first responders are the county governments, the local government officials. If they can't handle it, then they come to the state. If we can't handle it, we go to the feds. But what we've told all citizens of Hawaii is to prepare to take care of yourselves and your families for the first 3 days. And the reason we stress that is because the concept of civil defense is that we will help those who are least able to care for themselves initially. So what that means is people who are in hospital settings, people who are in nursing homes, the disabled, senior citizens, that's where we're going to go first. And so you need to not just have the, that 3 days of food, medical supplies, and other necessities on hand. You need to have an actual plan for your own family. So, Rick, you have two small children. You need to work out in advance, if a disaster occurs and you have a short notification, how will you reach your children? How will they reach you? Where will you meet up if there's not telephone service? You need to walk through with your children, those who are old enough to understand it, you need to walk through that plan with them in advance, because once something hits, it makes it much more difficult to carry out a plan that nobody practiced in advance. So I tell everyone I know that they and their family need to discuss this prior to something happening, and then they need to be prepared with this 3 days. Within 3 days, we will be able to help people in a broad way across the state. We do have plans that we exercise constantly between the local, the state, and the federal governments, and between the nonprofits who are part of the Civil Defense Network, and that includes groups such as the Red Cross. Now, we have a great advantage because we're the headquarters of Pacific Command, and so we have capabilities beyond what many other states would have in an emergency. Pacific Command has tremendous medical capabilities as well as other resources, water purification, so on. So I'm confident we would be ready. In the incident, the October earthquake of 06 that was mentioned with the electricity issue that occurred here, I believe that it was a fair criticism at the time of the existing electrical grid. It is worked out now. I think something like that would be unlikely to occur again. But I urge everyone, again, as we're moving into the hurricane season, is to be prepared yourself, your own family. Take personal responsibility rather than sitting and waiting for the government, because, again, we're going to go to the most vulnerable first. Now, the good thing about Hawaii is our ohana spirit, and I mean that sincerely. This is a time when caring for your neighbor, caring for someone down the street who you didn't really know, but they're disabled and you have the chance to help them, we will do that here. Whereas we see in some disasters, everyone just sits around waiting for the government to come. And that's not the way to respond to a disaster. So, yes, we practice. Since I've been in office, we've gone to 24-hour, 7-day-a-week coverage at Civil Defense, which was not the case previously. So we have beefed up the government capability, but it all depends on people taking personal responsibility.
Certainly so. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. I want to, if you don't mind, retreat back to the legislative session. And for folks who would like some insight on some of the machinations that take place that can be frustrating and bring a sense of even outrage, we were very fortunate that Laura Thielen of DLNR took a great amount of time to help us stay informed about a topic that just seemed to be such a common sense issue, so common sense that even lay people like myself could understand it. That and the move afoot in the big square building to effect a change to the Bureau of Conveyances, which just seems so logical. But help us understand this very commonsensical idea of how it worked its way through the legislature and where we are today.
Well, there's been a concern for decades, Rick, that the Bureau of Conveyances, which is where we record our deeds, you know, when you buy and sell property, so people know who owns the property, whether there are liens on the property and so on, that's handled by the Bureau of Conveyances, and there have been many studies over the last decades about the inefficiency of the department, and it was for a number of reasons. But as we moved into the electronic age, the computer age, it became clear that we needed to be able to have online registration of documents the way it's done in other parts of the country. And so the legislature has had copies of these studies. In fact, during Peter Young's confirmation, they made this a big issue that they wanted this brought up to date. So Laura came up with this plan. We had the employees committed to it, the union, the title companies, the real estate companies, and two senators, Jill Tokuda and Russell Kokobun on the Big Island, decided they don't want to move forward with this modernization. They didn't give any reason why. They just said, we want to do another study. So here you had Jill Tokuda from Oahu, you had Russ Kokobun from the Big Island, and then Gary Hoosier chimed in from Kauai, which is unbelievable because these neighbor island people are the ones at the big disadvantage. They can't walk over to the Bureau of Conveyances. So to record their deeds, they have to either put it in the mail and take days, or they have to fly here and have someone take it in for them. When any elementary school student knows, we could just go online and do this right now. That's how other government departments operate. Our tax department's operating that way. Our Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs is operating. And here's a department where every study has said we need to make this move. And yet these few people said, you know what, we don't want to do it now. We're going to do another study. And at that point, we just shook our heads. Here's something that's been studied so many times. The solution is clear. We have the will to do it, the capability, ready to move forward, improve public service, and they simply stand in the way. And they need to answer for these kinds of actions, Rick. They need to tell the public, what were you thinking? What were you doing? And the public, on their side, Rick, they need to take responsibility, too, because they keep putting these people back in office. Even when they're doing things that are not in the public interest. So hopefully with the upcoming elections in November, for those of these senators and House members, all the House members are up for re-election, half the Senate, hopefully people will follow their instincts and give some new people a chance, because the existing people are simply not operating in the public interest over and over again. And if you look at the Star Bulletin that's been running this poll that says, how do you think the legislators have done this session? And they let them grade from A to F. Over 82% of the people gave legislators a D or an F, but they keep getting reelected. So the solution is give some new people a chance, because these guys have proven over and over they're simply not responsive. And as you know, and as you said to me earlier, when the session ended, everybody wondered, what did they do?
That's right.
And what they did was a lot of negative things, as we've been talking about this morning, except for the couple highlights that I'm pointing out to you of harbors modernization, Turtle Bay, and some increased environmental protections that we proposed and supported. People just shrugged and said, well, what was that all about? They were here the entire session. What did they really do to address the cost of living, to address doctors leaving the state, to address a problem at the Bureau of Conveyances, to address affordable housing? They missed so many opportunities, and we've just come to think of this session as completely lackluster. It was just dull, boring, didn't get to the heart of the issues that people care about. But again, I think as voters, each of us have to take responsibility when we go to vote. Instead of just saying, well, they're a nice guy and I see him at the Little League games in my community, let's put someone who will really vote to make the change we need to give the tax relief that people are so desperate for today.
We appreciate Governor Linda Lingle being with us today, especially with the close of the legislative session so recent. And we'll come back with more of Governor Linda Lingle. So good of you to join us. We will get to our friends online. Hold on for just a moment, if you wouldn't mind, because an important part of our conversation today has to do about legislative process. Although the legislative session has come to an end, the process, Governor, continues, though.
Well, thanks, Rick, for the opportunity to let your listeners know that we really care about what they think about the bills that were passed. And I have about 220 more bills that have come up from the legislature. And I have until July 8th to make a decision. I can either sign them, let them become law without my signature, or veto them. And this is the time period between right now and right before July 8th that I need citizens to weigh in. If they have strong feelings one way or the other about a bill, you can email us at hawaii.gov. You can write a regular letter via snail mail. You can make a telephone call. Let us know either individually or through your association or your organization what you feel about any piece of legislation. This is truly the time when we are looking at these bills, analyzing them, and trying to determine, did we miss something? And often that comes from people who have specific knowledge about the bill. So please don't hesitate to contact us at this time and let us know your feelings.
Very nicely done. We're going to go to our friends online, and brevity will be deeply appreciated as we're coming to our top of the hour. Farzad joins us, Maui side. Farzad, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
My question is, in these times that we are going, the whole nation is going through a lot of economic hardships, do you and your administration have any stimulus plan for Hawaii, since Hawaii is, I believe, is the crown of the states of the United States of America? We can really capitalize on the fact that the whole world wants to come over here. Do you have any kind of plan? Maybe you can work with an airline that come up with very easygoing fares that can bring more customers over here, and that would basically generate more income for average small business, who also hotels, and do you have any plans like that?
Well, we have actually talked about this idea of trying to encourage airlines by subsidizing the seats coming into the state, but recognize that that would be hugely expensive for a small return. The Hawaii Tourism Authority does have a major marketing program now going on in partnership with some of the airlines. The good news is, in a meeting recently with a major carrier into the state, while they're going to decrease the seats system-wide on their airline, none of those seats will be decreased into the state. We've also had Hawaiian Airlines and Alaska Airlines add flights since ATA and Aloha have stopped their Trans-Pacific flights. So I expect by the end of summer we'll have a settling down of the industry, but there is no plan to actually use government money to subsidize the airlines into the state. We are, however, reaching out to them, meeting with them, doing these joint marketing programs with them, hopefully to encourage more people to visit Hawaii.
On that note, and again with time remaining, Super Ferry is poised to revisit Kauai. Your thoughts about this?
Well, I don't know that they're poised to do that, but they said they would be willing to if the community invites them in. And I think the community has started to recognize the advantage of having Super Ferry as an option. And that's what I've always seen the Super Ferry as, Rick, is one more option. I certainly didn't predict that the Aloha Air Cargo would have the difficulty they did, and I certainly didn't wish for it. But it did provide an opportunity to point up the advantage of having a variety of options when you're shipping between the islands or when you're traveling between the islands. And that's what my goal always has been, is to expand the options that our people have, whether it's options in schools or options in transportation. Don't lock us in and create monopolies where we have to go on one carrier or another, where price is... we're at the mercy because there's only one company that can do it. Super Ferry provides a different kind of option for people, but an option nonetheless. And you saw when the cargo was stopped for a couple of days, the first refrigerated trucks coming off the Super Ferry were from Maui, and they were from our farmers to get their products here to the main markets on Oahu. And we highlighted that during our support of Super Ferry. Why we wanted the legislature to fund the improvements, which they did, was for times like that, but really on a regular basis, that it gave farmers more options. So I think the Kauai people have suffered because of the decisions that they allowed a few people to make for them. I think the support for Super Ferry on Kauai is there. I don't think you have a lot of political courage for people to step forward, but I think they should, because as an elected leader, you should be maximizing the options that people have. Super Ferry is held to a very high environmental standard. In fact, a higher standard than any other transportation method between the islands. So we'll see. Time will tell. But I know that the people of Maui are very happy right now to have this capability.
I know that our time, unfortunately, has slipped away from us yet again, unfortunately. But we look forward to your next visit. Understand that you'll be leaving the island soon, though.
Yeah, I'm going to attend a conference over in Israel, Rick. I was invited by the president, Shimon Peres, to participate in a conference looking at the world tomorrow, called Facing Tomorrow. And besides President Bush, who will be there, Tony Blair, the former Prime Minister of Great Britain, Gorbachev, Henry Kissinger, quite a lineup of people, Nobel Prize winners. The founder of Google, Sergey Brin, will be there as well.
Nice.
Rupert Murdoch, the chairman and CEO of News Corp. So a lot of fascinating people, and I'm looking forward to having Hawaii be recognized as a leader in innovation in energy technology into the future, and just to meeting the kinds of people who can make certain that Hawaii stays top of mind to everyone.
And on that note, we thank you very much, as always, Governor, for your time. We wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Aloha.